Good evening to all of you. Give me just a minute to get wired up here. I feel like I'm going undercover with all these microphones they put on me. Good evening. It's good to see so many of you out this evening and able to worship God with us. On a gloomy, cold night, it was misting rain a little bit ago, and it's not now. The sun seems to always, or the rain always seems to stop, doesn't it? A few years ago, several years ago, I'm going to tell my age a little bit, but Molly and I were first married, and the elders just across the holler here over at Cartwright Church of Christ called me up, asked me if I would be interested in coming to work with them for a while. And so I agreed to do so. And really the main reason, or one of the main reasons, we were young. I was a little bit unsure of what I should do, what I needed to do, and I kind of wrestled with the decision of whether or not to go and try to preach sometime, somewhere part-time or technically full-time, really, at a part-time congregation. And Don Osborne, many of you know him, but he had actually agreed to go out there as well. And he kind of convinced me that I should go and I should work with them and at least try to learn. And I learned a lot of things working under Don and working with Don. He and I would go out on car rides together and we would go visit people. I never would have been able to do that without him. He would give me pointers now and then on lessons and pointers on scriptures. He would sometimes teach the class and I would preach the sermon. I learned a lot working with him, and I could never express just how much and just how thankful I was for his guidance. One of the things that he said as I was coming up preaching underneath him and learning from him, one of the things he said always stuck with me, and that was that preachers oftentimes preach what they need to hear. Preachers preach what they need to hear. This evening's sermon's no different. This is a sermon that I need to hear. I preached it before, about a year ago here. I was telling Al that. He said, well, as long as you change the pictures, nobody will ever know. I didn't change the pictures. So they may look familiar, and they may not, and that's okay. But the sermon's changed. The sermon's changed quite a bit because it's a sermon that I need to hear at this point in time. And it's a sermon that's very, very fitting for this year. It wasn't preached this year, but looking back about a year ago, I realized that this was a sermon that should have been preached in 2020. I was watching the news a few months ago and I saw a fella come on there. And he had written this book. It's called Where is God in a Coronavirus World? And the idea was simply the title. Where is God? As we watch the map grow redder and redder, as we watch this disease, this pandemic grow, where's God in all of that? As we watch millions and hundreds of thousands of people die, where is God in all of that? Let's extrapolate that even to this year. As we watch the turmoil that our country has been in, as we watch riots, as we watch, again, the pandemic, as we watch our election, as we watch all these things that are confusing, that are scary, that are uncertain, as we watch chaos seem to unfold around us, where is God? I went to a funeral a few years ago, This was a funeral for a young lady who had died under suspicious circumstances. It was a terrible situation. And the preacher got up at that funeral as her parents were sitting there. She was much too young to be laying in a casket. And as her parents were sitting there in the audience, the preacher said this, "I think it's natural to ask ourselves, why? I think it's okay to ask, where is God when something like this happens? Or perhaps, why does God allow things like this to happen? We're hurting, we're sad, and well, we just have to ask God why." In 2020, have you ever asked God why? Have you ever wondered, where is God? I want to share something with you, and that's that I have. There have been mornings when I've gotten up, I'll go down to the barn to feed the animals, and as I'm walking down there, I say a prayer to myself, God might guide me through the day and different things, and just have a conversation. As I'm going about scooping feed and things at the barn and feeding the goats and the horses and the chickens, I continue that prayer. And there have been mornings, and I'm not ashamed to tell you that I've hit my knees in the barn. And with tears coming out of my eyes, I've asked God, where are you? Because as this year rolls by and we see so many things happen, and we see so many bad things happen around us, it's an easy question to ask. That's really a simple question, isn't it? In Psalm chapter 42 and verse 3, the psalmist expresses that same thought. When he says, "My tears have been my food day and night while they say to me all day long, where is your God?" And the simple answer is right that God is everywhere. In Psalm chapter 139, as we read verses 7 through 12, it tells us that. It says, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence, Lord? If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there also. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest parts of the sea, even there your hand will lead me and your right hand will lay hold of me. If I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me and the light around me will be night, even the darkness is not dark to you and the night is as bright as day. Darkness and light are alike to you." Where's God? God's everywhere. It's really a simple question with a simple answer, isn't it? But I want to suggest to you that when we're hurting like that, when we're going through those emotions, that a simple answer sometimes isn't enough. Or maybe a simple question isn't enough, rather. What I'm suggesting is that a question that important in our lives deserves an answer a little more complex, doesn't it? Or perhaps we as human beings, perhaps we deserve a better question, or perhaps we should ask a better question. And what I mean by that, in Job chapter 35 and verses 9 through 10, Job's friend Elihu comes to him. And he sees the state of Job, and he says this. He says, "Because of the multitude of oppressions, they cry out." Why do people cry out? They cry out because of oppression. "They cry for help because of the arm of the mighty." And then listen to what he says. "But no one says, where is God my maker who gives songs in the night?" In other words, when things are going great, when blessings are raining down on you, nobody takes the time to say, where is God? Then, when do we ask? We ask, where is God when things are going wrong? Like when I'm all alone, where is God when I feel alone and I feel isolated? You know, in 1 Kings, in chapter 18 through 20, chapter 18 verses 20 through 22, we've got a story of a man who felt just like that. We remember the story of Elijah and how Elijah challenges the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel to a duel. And it says in verse 20, so Ahab sent a message among all the sons of Israel and brought the prophets together at Mount Carmel. Elijah came near to all the people and he said, how long will you hesitate between two opinions? If the Lord is God, then follow Him. But if Baal, then follow him. But the people did not answer him a word. And Elijah said to the people, I alone am left, a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. You hear the loneliness in Elijah's voice right here? I alone am left. We know the story. We know what happens, that God, Elijah prays to God and God answers his prayers and Baal never answers, right? And they take those prophets of Baal and they kill them. But then just the very next day, Jezebel threatens Elijah's life and Elijah runs. It says there he came to a cave and he lodged there, and behold, the word of the Lord said to him and came to him and said to him, where are you, Elijah? And he said, I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the sons of Israel have forsaken your covenant. They've torn down your altars. They've killed your prophets with the sword, and I alone am left, and they seek my life to take it away. I'm the only one. God, where are you when I'm alone? Well, God answers Elijah, and that answer is pertinent to us as well. In 1 Kings chapter 19 and verses 11 through 13, it says, then God said to him, go and stand forth on the mountain before the Lord. And Elijah goes out. He stands and it says, behold, the Lord was passing by and a great strong wind was rending the mountains and breaking pieces of the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, an earthquake came, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And then it says, after the fire, a still small voice. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and he went out and he stood in the entrance of the cave. What's the message to us? The message is that God does not answer chaos with chaos. Where's God? We serve a God that is in the still small voice. We serve a God that lives in chaos and brings sanity. Psalm chapter 139, where can I go from your spirit? Oh Lord, where can I flee from your presence? Where's God when we feel helpless? When we feel absolutely hopeless in life? You know, there's a story about a guy that happened to as well. In Jonah chapter 1, in verses 1 through 2, it says, the word of the Lord came to Jonah the son of Amittai, saying, arise and go to Nineveh, the great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah rose up, and he goes the opposite direction. He went to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. In verses 11 through 12, as he's on this ship going to Tarshish, a great storm comes up. And the people say, what can we do? What do we need to do to make the sea calm? In verses 11 through 12, Jonah says, pick me up and throw me into the sea, then the sea will become calm for you. In verse 7, they throw Jonah in the sea, and a great fish, in verse 17, comes and swallows him up. The Lord appointed a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the stomach of the fish for 3 days and 3 nights. Can you think of a more helpless person that we could possibly know? Here Jonah is in the middle of the sea, in the middle of a fish, in the belly of a fish. In Jonah chapter 2 in verses 1 through 5, it describes his helplessness here. Jonah says, I cried out of my distress to the Lord, and He answered me. I cried for help from the depth of Sheol. You heard my voice. You had cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the current engulfed me. All your breakers and billows passed over me. So I said, I have been expelled from your sight. Nevertheless, I will look towards you, towards your holy temple. Water encompassed me to the point of death. The great deep engulfed me, and weeds were wrapped around my head. Has there ever been a more hopeless person than Jonah? It's interesting to note here that Jonah says, I cried for help from the depth of Sheol. He compares his predicament to the afterlife, to being already dead, to being already assigned a fate. Has there ever been anybody more hopeless? But God's answer to Jonah In verse 7 of chapter 2 says, "While I was fainting away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you into your holy temple." God heard him. And in verse 10 it says, "The Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah out onto dry land." You see, we serve the God who brings hope to the hopeless. You know, if you go back into ancient times and you walk through ancient Greece, as Paul did in Acts when he was walking through the Areopagus, there Paul sees all these different altars, and he looks at all these altars, and there's one called the altar to the unknown God. See, they had an altar to everybody. They had a God for everything. They had a God for war. They had a God for fertility. They had a God even called Nike, who was the God of winged victory. They had all kinds of gods. And Paul stands up before them there in Mars Hill, if you remember the story, and he says, "I preach to you the God of these gods, the unknown God, the one true God." You see, we don't need a God for all that because we serve a God who commands everything. We serve the God of hope. In fact, we serve the God who brings hope to the hopeless. In Psalm chapter 139, "You're there. If I take the wings of dawn, if I dwell in the remotest part of the sea, even there your hand will lead me." Where's God when I'm afraid? Now when Daniel, if we remember the story of Daniel, these people were trying to sabotage Daniel, and they wrote a decree that nobody should be worshipped but the king, right? And it says, when Daniel knew that that decree was signed, he entered his house, his roof chamber. He had windows open towards Jerusalem. He continued kneeling on his knees three times a day and praying, giving thanks before God as he had been doing previously. And then these men came by agreement, and they found Daniel making petition and supplication before God. They brought it to the king, and the king has nothing left to do but to bind his decree. I was looking at Facebook the other day. You can get bogged down. You can get into a lot of useless time wasting on Facebook. But I saw something that somebody had posted that I thought was pertinent. When your king is a Nebuchadnezzar, be a Daniel. Hey, Daniel did what Daniel was going to do no matter what. He was going to pray. He was going to stand up and pray no matter the consequences. In Daniel chapter 6 and verse 16, it says, "The king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and cast in the lion's den. And the king spoke, and he said to Daniel, 'Your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you.'" In Daniel chapter 6 and verses 19 through 20, it says, "Then the king arose at dawn at the break of day, and he went in haste to the lion's den. When he had come near to the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice." And I've preached this sermon before, and I said that I thought Daniel was afraid. He very well may have been. But I missed a point. I think Nebuchadnezzar here was afraid as well. It says that he cried out with a troubled voice. He was afraid he had made a mistake. "The king spoke to Daniel, and he said, 'Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions?'" And of course, we know the answer, that he did. He shut the lions' mouths. You see, we serve a God who commands the lions. Can you think of a creature that is more fearsome than a lion? I am scared to death of snakes. I hate snakes. If I see a snake, I'll run the opposite direction. It's about the only thing around here that I'm afraid of. I've been hiking in the mountains, and I've run into black bears, and I sit there and look at them. I'm not going to pet them, but I'm not as terrified of a black bear as I am a snake. But I honestly believe that I would be more scared of a lion if I saw a lion in person. Can you think of a creature that is more terrifying than a lion? You see, we serve a God who commands the lions. In Psalm chapter 139, "Even there your hand will lead me, and your right hand, Lord, will lay hold of me." Where is God when we feel overwhelmed? When we feel like we don't have a path forward? If you're like me, you felt that way this year. And that's one of the things I've asked. Where is God? about. In Exodus chapter 14, verses 9 through 10, it says, as the Egyptians were coming out of Egypt, or as the children of Israel, rather, were coming out of Egypt, the Egyptians gave chase. It says, the Egyptians chased after them with all their horses and their chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen, and his army. They overtook them camping by the sea beside Pilath in front of Beersheba. As Pharaoh approached, the sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were coming after them, and they became very frightened, and so the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. You see, I want you to think about something here, and that is that the mightiest army in the ancient world here is chasing a group of vagabonds. Children of Israel had no army to speak of at this time. And yet they're facing down. They've got the sea on one side and the mightiest army in the ancient world on the other. God's answer. But Moses said to the people, "Do not fear. Stand by. See the salvation of the Lord, with which he will perform for you today. For the Egyptians who you have seen today, you will never see them again, ever. The Lord will fight for you while you keep silent." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the sons of Israel to go forward." Here they are standing against a sea. And God says, "Tell the sons of Israel to go forward." Of course, we know the end of that story, don't we? Moses stretched out his rod. God parted the waters. And they walked through on dry land. We serve a God who parts the dead end for us. In fact, we serve a God who has no dead ends in life. In Psalm chapter 139, it says, "Surely the darkness will overwhelm me. The light around me will be night. Even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is as bright as day." Finally, where is God when I suffer? In John chapter 11, verses 32 through 35, we've got a story about that. It says, "Therefore, when Mary came where Jesus was, she saw him. She fell at his feet, saying to him, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother Lazarus would not have died.' And when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and was troubled. And he said, 'Where have you laid him?' And they said, 'Lord, come and see.' And Jesus wept." Don't let the emotions of Jesus escape your attention right here. Jesus wept. You see, we serve a God who, as we cry, He cries with us. In Isaiah chapter 63 and verses 8 through 9, "For He said, 'Certainly, they are my people, sons who will not deal falsely.' So He became their Savior. In all their distress, He was distressed. In all their distress, He was distressed. And the angel of His presence saved them in His love, and in His mercy He redeemed them, and He lifted them and carried them all the days of old."